From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, we're going to do the Media Project here, and we hope that you'll have an opportunity to share a half hour with us as we talk about the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio. How you doing, Professor? Yes, you're feeling a little hoarse, you say?
No, and that was not a horse. That was a burr.
Oh, I'm sorry.
R-R-R-R-R. That sounded like a horse.
I thought it could have been a chicken.
Well, it could have been a cold horse. That's what it could have been.
I think we need to work on our sound effects here. All right. And with Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association, how you doing, Judy?
I am glad to be here, as always.
And we're very happy to have you. And Kaylin Brown of the College of St. Rose. You doing okay?
Grand.
She says, but it is cold. I mean, Alan's poor imitation of shivering notwithstanding.
No, the cold horse.
Yes, cold and horse. And raises a question about the coverage. You know, you see a lot of weather coverage on TV and all these people standing out there in the cold. What's with that? I mean, is your journalism improved if you're standing in the cold when you're talking about it being cold?
Isn't it just theater? I mean, I've seen weather people making snow angels. I mean, we talk about this when we have hurricanes, where you have people hanging onto poles and being blown away. It is just theater. But as a practical matter, you do have to get out there. And in the print business, we do send particularly the poor photographers out to get photos of people. But it does seem like we are just trying to entertain the audience, not inform them.
I agree with you. Yeah, and a perfect example was NBC's meteorologist last night, Wednesday night, said, look at this T-shirt. And in 4 minutes, they had taken a wet T-shirt and it had frozen solid. But there was a big point about showing this hardened T-shirt on the national newscast.
There's some value in that, then, isn't there, I suppose? it visually demonstrates how cold it really is. How cold is it? Well,
it's
cold
theater.
It can freeze your T-shirt. It's theater, but well, gets a point across.
Well, if I may, I would like to take it from the other side, which is...
As usual. Go ahead.
That is not kind. Judy Patrick, however...
It's just theater, after all.
Who I know to be a kind person. Okay, so it's what we know intuitively, what you know, Rex, what you know, Judy, what you know, Kaylin, is that this is something people care about. You know, Trump, schmump. You get it all the time. He lied again. Who cares after a while? But the weather is significant. And when it's below zero, I went through the little hamlet of West Stockbridge. It was 13 below zero. 13 below zero. Now, that's something that'll make your eyebrows open up, and you know that that's what people want to hear about, right?
Certainly people care about the weather, and there's not a lot to talk about other than the forecast, I imagine, so they have to liven it up with antics. But again, that makes it theater. I agree with you. The weather is very important to people, especially dramatic weather. I mean, that everyday weather is not that interesting.
I think the Times had a story about the severe weather we're having here, the Arctic cold versus the Australian wildfires, because the heat is so high and what all this means concerning climate change. So it wouldn't be a bad idea maybe for the meteorologists to continue to keep mentioning the genesis of these extreme weather situations.
That would be a very responsible thing to do for all of these trained meteorologists on these stations, to actually use the opportunity to educate people about the effects of climate change.
Is that a hit, Rex?
It is a hit. I think that, instead of just having the happy, oh, here it comes, here's the weather forecast, we've all heard that. Give us a little bit more. Give us some substance on what is the really most critical issue of the time, survival of our species as a result of the decline of the environment.
Yeah. The last thing I got last night was a foolish person who wrote me and said, how dare you come to Albany from Great Barrington?
How dare you?
Every morning. Do you realize what you're contributing to the carbon footprint during this thing?
Well, I thought maybe it was an immigrant thing.
That's the first one I've ever that's the first one I've ever gotten of that kind. And I wrote back and said, I presume you're not married? It's going to take some thinking on his part that I don't get to live necessarily where I want to live, as opposed to, because he said, why don't you live in Albany? But there's another part of this weatherman thing, Rex and group, that I think is very important. I'm looking at Judy's face. I don't think she looked any good.
I think it was because you used a gender-specific weatherman.
Meteorologist, flight attendants. Come on, get with the program.
You are so right. And for all of those people who would take offense from that, I deeply, deeply, deeply apologize. Okay, so now my issue is when it's overhyped, the weather is overhyped, we're going to get 2 feet of snow and you get 3 inches. Get it?
Well, it could just be poor execution of the forecasting rather than hype.
Well, look at it this way, Rex, for whatever it's worth. If you overhype the danger and you get less, are you worse off or better off than if you do the exact opposite, which is to say you're going to get very little and get a lot? Don't you see?
We'll talk to people who run restaurants because they will bemoan any of these dire forecasts because they won't get any business that night. And if nothing happens, they've lost a ton of money. It happens to theaters. It happens to any business that relies on people coming in. I mean, a bad storm will affect the economy, and the threat of a bad storm will also affect the economy.
So there we go. We have now talked about the weather. Nobody ever does anything about it, right? Everybody talks about the weather. Nobody does what they say.
Well, wait a second now. Wait.
Alan's going to do something about it.
No, actually, this is where the religious enters into it.
Oh.
Sarah Sanders.
I don't think we've ever gone here.
This is good.
God in the newsroom. Let's hear it.
Sarah Sanders, as we speak yesterday,
Sarah Sanders
announced that Donald Trump was president because God had willed it.
Yeah.
Please unsay that.
Well, yeah, that's what she says.
She says God wanted. And she said that. And so my position on this is, how do you know it was God? How do you know it wasn't little devil? Which is what chartouk means in Russian.
It's not Satan working his place.
You did not just say that's what your last name means.
That is. Cuomo, in my longstanding program with Mario Cuomo, he discovered one day that Shartok in Russian is little devil.
Really?
He never, ever let me forget it.
Huh.
Thank you for reminding us.
And what does Cuomo mean in Italian? Well, you can make up something the same way he did.
I actually told him that was my big mistake.
Oh, well, there you go.
That created
it. Be careful what you divulge. So here's news. Trey Gowdy. Do you remember him, the Republican congressman with sort of like axe handle face?
Him I didn't like.
Well, good thing that you're not a big Fox News viewer because he's joining Fox News as a contributor. He is the 7th ex-elected official, according to Politico, to join a network over the past month. For example,
A network, not only Fox, right?
Right, a network like Jeff Flake has joined CBS News. Andrew Gillum, who lost the race for Florida governor, has joined CNN. And Claire McCaskill is going to NBC and MSNBC. Claire McCaskill, the former senator from Missouri. And they join folks like, Jennifer Granholm, the former governor of Michigan, has been on MSNBC. And a lot of former officials are finding a niche in broadcasting. Is that okay?
A niche or a niche?
Well,
I think it's important that we notice that there's a difference between the broadcasting and print platforms, and that it's probably more acceptable for a broadcast platform to invite former legislators to become pundits. I think that's what they're going to be, unless they're being called or presented sort of as a journalist. I'm thinking of Stephanopoulos
has kind of become
that way.
Oh, yeah, he is employed as a journalist instead of just a commentator. Yeah.
Which concerns me the most because we're training people to be journalists and random individuals who had a day in the limelight are stepping up to a job for which they are not prepared or trained.
Okay, so here's my argument, and you're not going to like it.
I know.
I want to warn you in advance. You're a college teacher. You are value free. You're in the classroom, and for all
value free.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you have no value.
I have a lot of values.
Well, but
let's start with education being the top one.
Yeah, no, I know. but what you've been saying, and no disrespect intended, for all the years I was in the classroom, And that was a long time, really 40-something years. I found that my students wanted to hear from people who had done it rather than from people who hadn't done it and who read their notes out of a textbook. So therefore, are you looking at me sternly?
No, I'm looking at you because I did the journalism and I'm teaching it, so I would fall
So you would qualify, as long as you don't go over to the dark side and start talking like the other guys. You know, based on my experience, I did this and that. And then the students look up at you and they say, that's very interesting. They've done something. Now, all of the adjuncts at University of Albany and your adjuncts at your college, St. Rose, have had experience. So we have a wonderful producer of this program, David Gustina. He teaches over at UAlbany, and they call him professor. They don't say, oh, Mr. Adjunct. They say, professor. And he deserves it because he knows what he's talking about. I fear sometimes that not every professor, some do, but not every professor knows what the hell they're talking about.
So I'm correlating that to having elected officials serve as journalists. Do they know what questions to ask?
Well, but they may, in fact, be in a situation now where they have seen it all. They know what happens in the halls of Congress. They know how the deals are made. They're not some overlookers from other places. You know, don't you see?
They were affiliated with political parties, and certainly journalists can be and are as well, but theirs they wear on their sleeves. So.
Well, as commentators, it's one thing, I think. Like you use Alan on WAMC, Terry Gibson, former state senator who's now teaching at New Paltz. You use him as a commentator on the morning program, and he's good. You know, he knows what he's talking about, right? And so there's some value to that kind of thing. But the difference is if you try to pass them off as independent analysts, independent reporters, that's going to be difficult. So I don't terribly disagree with you, Alan. You're saying you're standing up for this practice.
I know you agree with me, and I know it must hurt like hell to put those words.
Can I say that I hate this because I feel that they offer nothing. What is Jeff Flake going to say? Really nothing. They never really add to the conversation. The other thing is when they're in office, they always positioning themselves for that hire after they leave office. Does that make them more likely to give the tips to the cable television network that's more likely to hire them afterward? It's unseemly to me.
That's
and again, they also never say anything that interesting.
All good points.
They're great points. And I love that you said it so strongly, Judy. And conversely, too, what about journalists who are covering a beat and then end up taking a job, for instance, as public relations practitioners for someone they had covered? But the point is, what if you looked back at their coverage and analyzed the coverage? Would you find that they had favored the elected official or company or whomever that they had previously covered?
Not only that, if you take a look at CNN, for example, and see that they know they have to have a required Republican on their panel, so they get Rick Santorum, who they wind him up and predictively says exactly what they expect them to say.
The Shark Talk theory of F sharp. This is one of my favorite theories that is actually right. I mean, you know, a journalist knows that if you're going to call a certain person, you're going to get a certain reaction. I had a thoughtful African-American official call me yesterday to complain that somebody had become, in his view, in the pages of the Times Union, the black of the month. Now, it's a really outrageous phrase that,
of course,
I wouldn't use. Well, he was an African-American official, but he was making the point, and it was intended to be a startling comment that we were going to one person in particular for comments instead of having a diverse array of commentators from the African-American community. It's a, you know, kind of a thoughtful critique, and I have to take a look at that, you know, and then you figure out, well, how do you get around that? You know, what do you do about that?
Yeah, remember when I talked on this program about ease of coverage?
Mm-hmm.
Too often people get lazy. And so what happens is when they have one guy that, or one woman, thanks for that, who does what they're supposed to.
Did she kick you under the table?
No, just a look. The look was all I need.
She gave me a little affirmation, I thought, because I just didn't want to leave. So, you know, what happens is they go to the same person. Now, for example, here in Albany, in New York State, the senior pundit, the person who knows more about state politics than anybody.
It's going to be Blair Horner, right?
That's correct.
Absolutely.
It's Blair Horner.
There we go.
And so he's a regularly.
He's eloquent. He's accessible. He's
calls
thoughtful.
Back, calls you back right away.
Yep.
Calls you back right away. And he's a wonderful guy. So with all of that said, one says, okay, so why you always call Blair Horner? Why don't you call Donnie Szymborski? You know, he knows about
one of the kids you grew up with, right?
Because Donnie you're doesn't making take the call, right?
There you go,
and Donnie you're making man. An excellent point. That truly is an excellent point, that reporters can too often rely on the same sources, but they have an obligation to do the work and find alternative sources and make sure there are numbers of viewpoints from multiple ethnic perspectives and gender, and you have to include as many people as possible. And in the classroom, just like in the newsroom, we talk about that. Make sure that you're not going back to the same people over and over again.
Some years ago, Gannett Newspapers had an initiative in their 100-plus newspapers around the country to try to broaden the coverage to include more diverse viewpoints. And the reporters actually were scored based upon, did they include the voice of an older person in the story, the voice of an Asian, the voice of an African-American? The difficulty was, in some of the very small communities that Gannett serves, there might have been only one Asian family or something. And because this was done as a chain, as a group-wide effort, people were going back to the same person over and over again in every story. It really skewed.
In order to get the number of points.
The intent behind it was appropriate, but then what emerged was what you're concerned about, that the same person becomes the go-to source all the time.
On the other hand, what are you going to do? I mean, you got Blair Horner, my friend, my very good friend, Jerry Benjamin, for a long time.
Yeah.
Was the number one quote in the New York Times.
When Mickey Carroll of the New York Times finally met him, he said, in person, he said, it's upstate quote. Because Jerry Benjamin was the guy that the Times would call for a quote from upstate.
Well, I'll tell you a story. It's in my book on Mario Cuomo that you may have heard.
Me and Mario, right?
Yeah, me and Mario. Yeah. That's right. Conversations in Candor. You can look it up. It's available for about $2 on Amazon.
I saw it for 79 cents the other day.
No.
You were looking because you desperately needed to get the book.
Well, the point was, there's a story about Mickey Carroll, which he didn't like, the late Mickey Carroll, I may say, in which he comes in the room, the governor's guy, Gary Fryer, your very good friend, was standing there looking on, and he said, because I had my show with the governor, and he said, we're coming in the show with you today. And I look at Gary Fryer, and in almost imperceptibly, he's doing a no sign with his head back and forth. I said, you can't come in.
You mean they wanted to be in the studio to hear the show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, by the way, we always give everybody immediately give them the tape as we do to this day, the CD. So I said, no, you can't come in. Well, he takes a look at me, Mickey Carroll, who had been put up there because they thought Cuomo was going to be the president. And he said,
do you want me to pick up the rest of the story here? Because I've heard it enough. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, please. Go ahead. And what did he say to you then?
Please
finish the story.
So the end of the story is Mickey Carroll puts up his hand. He looks at me and he says, okay, but if Cuomo croaks on your show, you won't read about it in the New York Times.
Great comment. Oh. Brilliant. It was great. Mickey gave good quote. Anyway, this is the Media Project for Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, Kalen Brown, and I'm Rex Smith. Hey, we should talk a little bit about coverage of presidential candidates, because even though we're not doing that much of it here because they don't care about New York at this point, it's being done around the country. What do you think about this? So there's this guy, Howard Schultz, who is one of the flavors of the month, as many people are launching. Howard Schultz is the founding CEO of Starbucks, and he's now saying, I might run for president as a third-party contender. And the coverage, I have to say, it strikes me that is just dominated by Democrats saying, what a jerk, because they don't want him to run.
You can mark me down in that column.
Uh-huh.
The reason that it's such a story, Rex, I'm sure, is that the possibility is that he will elect Trump another time by running as a third-party independent candidate. So it becomes a very interesting story.
Hmm. But, you know, journalists' job is not to reflect the biases of Democrats who are concerned that he's going to upset their apple cart. It is to hold candidates to account for their positions on the issues. And so in that regard, what the reporters really ought to be doing, I think, is asking Mr. Schultz what he's about. And What in the world is he about?
He doesn't. He thinks that AOC and all the rest of them are way too liberal and that they want health care for all. And he doesn't believe in it. He doesn't think we can afford it. He says, I do it for my company. In that, he's joined by another possible third-party candidate, Mr. Bloomberg.
No. Bloomberg is not a third-party candidate.
Not yet.
No, he absolutely says he's going to run as a Democrat if he runs. He's very clear that he's delineated.
All right. We'll take your comment under advisement.
Yeah, it's the different billionaire. Just not every billionaire wants to run for president.
But here's the point. Schultz is not alone. But if he thinks that will resonate, that idea will resonate, then there are those of us who engage in punditry from now and then who think, you know, then he should run as a Democrat.
You know, I think he had the advantage of good timing. He made the announcement on a slow news day, and he's gotten an excessive amount of coverage, I think, because a lot of journalists like Starbucks coffee, and there's that cachet that comes with them.
You know, that is so interesting that you say that, because I interviewed Andrew Cuomo on that very subject. I said, what about Schultz? And Governor Cuomo said, I don't know about him because I don't drink Starbucks.
Yeah, he says, I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy.
Donuts. That afternoon, I was on for our Congressional Corner program with a congressman from Connecticut, who said, I said, what do you think about Schultz? He says, I don't know. I think there's a memo that has gone out to the Democrats to say, I only drink Dunkin' Donuts.
Ah, interesting. You know, we're going to have coffee choices becoming a matter of partisan preference. That's pretty amazing. But what happens when one candidate is a draw for cable news? And we know that cable news so much sets the political agenda of those who are paying attention to the news.
Sure.
Donald Trump was the example of that. Look at this. So the greatest political draw so far in terms of ratings is Kamala Harris.
Right.
She raised CNN's ratings to this town hall with them, and they get way beyond what CNN ordinarily gets. So if you're the president of CNN, how do you disregard that? How do you not say, you know, we need to pay more attention to the candidate who's clearly more popular, who draws more attention, who's therefore more viable?
Well, you know, Rex, with some exceptions, I love you. I'm going to say that as only I can say. Yeah. But some exceptions. but here's one. Have you considered this?
Yeah.
Maybe the president of CNN has decided, if I get this lady elected president, boy, does she owe me, as opposed to I have to be fairer.
Oh.
Well, this is what happened when Trump was running. He got really great ratings, and he got more coverage. And more coverage, more ratings. When I first looked at those numbers, it made me feel good because I understood that people still cared about the election. And so I want to see what kind of ratings the next candidate gets. I myself didn't watch it. I find those town halls fairly boring.
I'm interested in making sure that somehow journalism can stay on track and keep an eye on the policies and not speculate about what may or may not be, whether a candidate is going to be able to, for instance, cast as many votes in their elected position currently. There was a story today in the Times Union about Gillibrand, which I thought was a tough, tough treatment of this candidate. And it looked back at figures about Clinton and how many votes she had missed. And then there was an aftermath sentence that talked about, oh, Obama did that too. So I really questioned the fairness of that coverage. I think it deserves a better look. And I think it's important that we're not speculating about the candidates and we're looking at where they stand on policy issues.
I think, Professor, you are so unfair to Rex, poor Rex, who's sitting right next to you, who runs that newspaper.
No, I didn't look.
And here's the reason why. Because it's as if the only thing they've ever done was one story on Gillibrand. They've done a lot of stories on Gillibrand and entering the race and all the rest of it. I think it is perfectly legitimate to say, you know, you run for one office, you win that office, and you promise, by the way, which she did, that she would serve out her term. As soon as it's over, she announces. So I think one and one makes two. I think it's a perfectly legitimate story. There.
There, he says. Who am I to disagree? Big news in the cable frontier. Fox News marked 17 straight years as number one among cable newsers. And on MSNBC, Rachel Maddow over Hannity in terms of ratings. So, you know, interesting times in the cable network. Finally, a little bit of good news here as we leave the program. It turns out the Democrats and Republicans, according to the latest poll from MIT, actually, Democrats and Republicans alike continue to trust traditional media sources over sites that cheerlead for their teams. How about that?
What do you mean?
Well, it just says that on a scale of 1 to 5, asking voters for the trust factor, they rate higher traditional news sources as opposed to such things as the Daily Caller on the right or the Daily Kos on the left. They tend to go more, they trust more the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, traditional sources.
I think that's a dumb poll.
Well, there you go.
And a poll, a study.
Yeah, it's a study. A study. Sorry. Yes, there we go. So we have to go.
No.
It's true.
This program ought to be an hour.
Oh, there you go. Him again. That's Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Caitlin Brown, and I'm Rex Smith, and we thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Never has complained.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Caitlin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.